Okay, everybody, welcome back once again to Tech Gumbo. I'm Haggai Davis II, along with Haggai Davis III, and we'd like to welcome you to Tech Gumbo. Here on our show, we like to talk about the past, present, and future of all things technology in a topical, interesting, and digestible way. Without geek speak or a bunch of acronyms, we just want to talk about technology that's important to us and important to you.
We also want to thank Cardinal Capital. To business owners and CEOs, hopefully you have a good relationship with your lender. Even if you do, sometimes you face other challenges, such as a need to consolidate debt, a want to level out your cash flow, or a desire to buy new equipment because you're in growth mode. If this describes you, give Cardinal Capital a call, whatever your need or challenge. They have over 4,000 lenders where they source commercial capital for business clients. Chris, Gary, and Rob at Cardinal Capital have a passion for business, and they want you to succeed. When you meet with Cardinal Capital, they get to know you and your business, so they can present your needs to a lending institution that will best fit your unique situation. In short, they go after money for your business. They translate your business into what's important for lenders, and they are good at it. Depending upon what the deal is, no matter how complicated or straightforward, they will help maximize your profitability while setting your business up for success. They find the best solution for your situation, all while being fun and easy to deal with. For more detailed information, visit their website at cardinalcap.net. You can also call them 225-308-3700 or email them info@cardinalcap.net.
Okay, Mr. Davis, let's kick off a little tech gumbo for the day.
Sounds great.
Start off with the news and updates, as we so enjoy doing. And the first thing is Gmail is now 20 years old.
This is pretty incredible that whenever it was released on April Fool's Day, 2004, a lot of people weren't sure what to make of it. They weren't sure, was it a prank? Was it something serious? Was it going to stick around? Was it going to be revolutionary? Was it going to be a dud? Because this was also at a point in time before Google was the everything. Google Maps had not been released yet. And so whenever you think about all the different services that Google has today, Gmail really kind of kicked off that entire G suite of items. Google Docs definitely didn't exist yet.
If you go back 20 years ago, people had at Hotmail, at Yahoo, at AOL, all these other places that are kind of still out there. You still see a few of them lingering, but by and large, if you don't have your own domain name or email to a specific domain, you're using Gmail now.
Because it's free. It's easy. It's pretty good. I mean, it does everything you need it to.
You get a terabyte of storage with it now. You started off with a gigabyte of storage back 20 years ago.
Yeah, and the fact that you can just create them endlessly. Whenever I wanted to sign up for a service and not have it connect back to my regular email address, you just make a Gmail account, and that way all the spam gets flooded to that place. And so there's a lot of ways that it's just very convenient. It's very easy. It's a fantastic service.
Wow, you just reminded me. I actually did create an email address for spam when I used to sign up with a couple of accounts. And I'm sure it's still out there. I've probably not. Well, Google may have killed it by now. It might be 10 years since I've looked at it. But I need to go back and check and see if that email is still active.
Yeah, Google every once in a while goes through, and anything that's been dormant for a decade or so, they'll purge just to free up all the space in their servers. But it's really convenient if you just want to test to see what are the services that are leaky. You know, whenever you sign up for something, who's really going to dump all the spam into your inbox? And maybe there's one email that you actually want. So you say, okay, yes, I signed up for this service, and everything coming behind it, you know, is garbage. That's a great way to use a Gmail account.
So Gmail started 20 years ago. Google Podcast just shut down this past week.
Yeah, Google Podcast is that foray into Google's everything. This is the third podcasting service. There was Google Listen, and then there was Google Play Music Podcasts, and this is now Google Podcast, and there's something coming afterwards, and that's YouTube Podcasts. And so it's really easy to get lost in all of this. It's the Google name plus the word podcast and some branding in the middle. It's all basically the same thing.
Yeah, it's all going to YouTube now. If you're out there searching, if you used to listen to the show on the Google Podcast app, and there were a lot of people who did, You'll be able to find us over on YouTube podcast, or you can certainly find us on any one of other ones, Pocket Cast, Spotify, Audible, Apple Music,
Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM. That's, you know, a lot of your traditional podcast platforms will pick us up. And this is all part of Google's attempt to simplify a lot of their branding. That Google Music is also shut down and gone over to YouTube. And so they're trying to be a bit more tidy here. We'll see if it works out, how long it lasts.
Yeah, the whole everything is YouTube. All of the music, all the videos, all the podcasts, everything is just now YouTube. And I guess it makes a little bit of sense because you're wanting everything on the one common platform, but you were so prevalent with that. You're taking the name Google out, which is going to be confusing to a lot of people.
Oh, I agree. I think it's more in the long run will be beneficial for users, and that whenever you think about Google wants, this is the place where all the content is. Whenever people make podcasts, a lot of times now they'll have the video of the podcast and they'll have them talking. And so for them, as the creator, they just get to just post it in one place. And then you, the consumer, can go say, oh, this is the, you know, the Conan O'Brien podcast. This is the Pablo Torre podcast. And that, do I want the video version or do I want the audio version? But they're just coming from the same place. That simplifies the user experience. That's probably their goal. I'm curious to see how well they're able to execute on that.
And the good news, this isn't the complete renaming of the Twitter platform. This is just on par with what Google has done. And I know there's a website, the Google Graveyard, with all of the different services through the years that Google has spun up and killed off. I don't know what the total number is nowadays, but I mean, it just means that they keep trying. And good on them for giving it a run. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't.
Yeah, that's definitely always been their mindset, is they're going to try everything. And some of it's going to work and some of it's not going to work.
So the FCC has now officially adopted new broadband standards.
This is really great that they have raised the floor for broadband. It was 25 megabits. It is now up to 100 megabits per second.
For those of you who remember far enough back, it went from 4 megabits download up to 25 megabits download. That was back in 2015 when they raised that rate. And the long-term goal, they want to try and get it to where you've got a full gig download speeds and 500 megabits of upload speeds. And that's great. At some point down the road, we'll get there when everyone's using 8K TV and 8K videos and all of that's coming. I get it. We're on 4K now. And with 500 megabits of throughput here in the house, we don't barely break 100 when we're doing anything, but we have it available should we need it.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of the idea here, is your future proofing. That in 2015, whenever the limit was raised from 4 megabits up to 25, at that point in time, you said, oh, well, 25, you're kind of on the cusp there, but pushing up to 100, it's pretty easy to you know, break past 100. As you said, going up to a gig, right now, you really kind of need several people to bang it on the internet to get up to a gig right now here in 2024. But 5 years, 10 years from now, and as everything starts chewing up more data, as everything starts getting bigger and shinier, that number will start to become more and more relevant.
So the interesting thing is, according to the FCC, back in December of 2022, 45 million Americans lacked access to both 100 down and 20 up of fixed speeds, or 35 down and 3 up on cellular 5G mobile devices. And it came up in conversation about SpaceX and their Starlink satellite-based internet. And right now, SpaceX is mostly between 200 and 300 down and upwards of 100 to 150 up. They're kind of there.
I think it's a lot going to come down to what is the reliability of that number. That, you know, obviously, whenever you're getting the standard ISP coming in from the wall, very rarely are you going to hit that true maximum number. And I think it's going to be up to Starlink to show in the coming year or years that they are reliably hitting that number and that they can provide that service to all of their customers and that they can provide service to all of the Americans who aren't at that threshold yet. That 45 million Americans is much larger than the total Starlink install base. And so if Starlink could make a pitch to serve that base, if they could say, here's how we're going to grow to all those users and how many of those users even want access to high-speed internet or access to broadband internet, you're getting into some complicated questions there, and it's kind of messy right now.
It will be interesting to continue to watch the ongoing trying to get more and more people on the internet. But if people aren't willing to spend $100 a month on their internet to get the 100 down and 30 up for their minimum speeds, then who are we trying to serve here with that minimum number?
It's also about setting a threshold, that it's more about understanding that this is the number that is viewed as a requirement to function in society, basically. That's, you know, the necessary access to email, access to web pages, access to downloading files. That is, this is kind of how you judge if a person can reasonably be part of the online community. This is what the government is saying is their expectation.
Moving along, Facebook is kind of reviving one of the things that everyone used to do 20 years ago when Facebook was first coming around. They're really coming back with the Facebook poke.
This was an iconic feature of Facebook, that you'd sit there and poke people and they'd poke you back, and you'd sit there, you know, sometimes you'd have 10 different people you were sitting there poking back and forth with. And it was just this goofy little thing that meant everything and meant nothing, especially as teens, whenever I was on Facebook. And this was also the Wild Wild West, and we really didn't know what to make of it. And at some point in time, it kind of faded out of popularity. And so Facebook hid it deeper into the bowels. They never actually deleted it. It was still there if you really knew how to find it, but apparently they're trying to bring it back.
Yeah, so if you want to poke your friends, all you have to go is to the search bar on the upper left and just type in the word P-O-K-E, and hit enter, and then you're going to see a list of all of your friends. And you'll, if you want to just poke them, you can click on the button and start poking your friends just like you did back in 2007.
I remember as late as 2011, 2012, was still being a big deal. But I think definitely by like 2013, 2014, it was falling off.
That would have been big for your age group. I think it was interesting for people my age the first one or two times. And then it was like, oh, okay, never mind. I don't really, no, you don't need to be poking me. So it's never been anything for folks my age, but I can see where a teenage would have thought that was funny.
Yes. I'm sure that if it were to come back, it moved to that point in time, as you said, wherever the first one or two would be novel, be like, oh, wasn't this so much fun back a decade ago, 15 years ago? But after a little while, I think it would get old. We just have developed new and different communication styles.
Speaking of new styles of doing things, Amazon has decided they're going to ditch the just walk out checkouts at its Amazon Fresh grocery stores.
This was a technology that we talked about several times on the show because we were pretty excited about it. We thought this was so freaking cool that the way that it worked is you had a basket and the basket was attached to your Amazon account, and you would walk through the store and you would just grab the items and you put them in the basket. And Amazon would automatically total all of that up for you, and you would just walk right out, and it would charge it directly to your account, and you never had to stop moving. Well, it turns out that's not quite what was happening.
Yes, initially, when all this was first being introduced back in 2015, 2016 timeframes, I remember being so excited about it because they were saying this was going to be RFID technology, the radio frequency ID. So when you pick something up and you put it in your basket, as you went out the checkout store, you walked past the receptors, every one of those RFID tags in your basket were totaled up and it hit your credit card and and it was exact. You didn't have to slow down. It was just going to be great. But it turns out they weren't quite doing that.
Well, they were trying, but they were just trying badly. Their goal was to be at 99.5% accuracy and to have about 50 out of 1,000 sales reviewed by video footage. Turns out it was 30% accuracy and 700 out of every 1,000 purchases were reviewed by humans.
They had call centers back in India just watching everybody walking through the store. When you picked up a certain thing, they would start tallying for you based upon what was on the camera footage. And sometimes they would get overwhelmed and they would get backlogged. And it would be hours or days later that all of a sudden the receipt would show up in your inbox that, oh, by the way, this is what we decided to charge you based upon what we think you walked out with.
Yeah, this is really a huge failure on Amazon's part. This was a technology that they were really excited about. They had a lot of press releases. They had a lot of news going about it. This was something that they said was the future. And so for it to have failed as horribly as it did, it makes sense as to why it never expanded, that it was fundamentally not scalable. And so, because if it had worked, it would have rolled out everywhere. And the plan was, oh, the rollout is coming soon. And I think we're seeing now why it never did.
Yes, why it never made it over to the Whole Foods that Amazon spent so much money when they purchased. This was only in the Amazon Fresh stores. And, you know, they gave it a run, but those call center folks can only read so much.
Another pretty big disappointment, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, turns out it was hacked by the Chinese.
Back in February, they had to publicly admit, because if they're forcing businesses across the country to admit when you get hacked, they damn well better as well. And it turns out they got hacked and they had to admit, yes, we've identified an exploitation of vulnerabilities in our system, and we've traced it back. Yes, the Chinese have gotten into our system, but we think we have it isolated now.
Yeah, that's not great. This is the agency which is supposed to be in charge of all cybersecurity and digital infrastructure, and for them to have a target on their back and to fail that test does not look good.
No, when you're the agency that is supposed to be zipped up tighter than everything else, and they're the ones who are creating all the rules for how to really show everybody how to protect yourself, and you've made this much of a blunder by letting hackers get into your system. It, number one, shows, okay, there's humans that work in there. Any place where there are humans who connect a computer to the internet, there are vulnerabilities, and even the best can be gotten. And they were gotten.
Yeah. And if they were gotten, that means you too can be gotten. But they had to know that there was a giant spotlight on them. That if you are the single agency in charge of this, every hacker and their grandma is going to be sitting down, teaming up together to come after you, especially the state-sponsored hackers.
And New York City has tried their hand at the AI chatbot thing, and it didn't go so well for them either.
No, this is exactly what you would expect, or what you, the listener who listens to our show often and has a reasonable expectation of how to implement an LLM, that sometimes it just gets stuff wrong. And the problem is it got important stuff wrong. That this was a chatbot that was designed to help out with New York City government. That if you had questions about, oh, what are certain rules? How do these things work together? You could go talk to this chatbot and it would give you the answer. But the problem is it gave you very wrong answers.
This got all the way down to the point of whether or not landlords had to accept Section 8 housing vouchers, and do restaurants have to accept cash, and all these things that are laws and everybody knows in New York City. You have to follow these laws. The bot was just making stuff up and giving wrong answers.
It would be one thing if you were to tell me that this is a bot designed to run on New York City's legal services and it couldn't tell me how a nuclear bomb was built. I'd be okay with that. But if you're going to tell me it knows New York City's laws, you got to get those right. This is just big egg on their face.
Yeah, so Mayor Adams, when he was out there so excited about this, did not see this screw up coming the way it did. We want to thank General Informatics for sponsoring our show. General Informatics is an information technology firm with a mission to make our clients even more successful through the best use of technology. Based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, General Informatics is a premier IT managed service provider delivering exceptional managed IT solutions to a diverse base of customers across the southeastern United States. From the beginning, we have maintained our commitment to meeting the growing needs of our clients through continuous innovation. With over 20 years of experience and a team of 180 plus employees, including technicians, engineers, program designers, GI has evolved to become the leading IT partner of business schools and government agencies. Our managed services teams can run your digital infrastructure or support your team on an on-demand basis, letting you focus on your business strengths. This has become a proven formula. So proven that 98% of our clients continue to do business with us year after year. Whether you need IT services, new technology, or have a question, visit us on the web at geninf.com.
If you enjoyed our show today, we are here on Talk 107.3 FM every Saturday at 4 p.m. and the show reruns Sundays also at 4 p.m. If you missed any part of the show or you'd like to hear this or previous episodes, check out our podcast available on almost every podcast platform, including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, and more. When you're there, be sure to subscribe so you get notified every time we post a new episode. If you like our show or you have any suggestions, let us know on our website at www.techgumbo.net. Thank you for listening to Tech Gumbo.